Hello and welcome to the Irish Fire Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Houghton. I'm an entrepreneur, investor, and financial independence enthusiast, sharing my financial freedom journey. Stay tuned and welcome aboard. I hope that you're doing well. I have a little bit of a treat in store in today's episode. Back in 2020, we were fortunate enough to find a way to buy a new property whilst not selling our current property that we were living in. We were able to effectively draw equity from our property, allowing us to buy the new property and turning our old property into a buy-to-let investment. The broker that helped us with that was Hugh. And Hugh left Mortgage ABC a couple of years later and introduced me to Laura Mansbridge, who took over from Hugh. She's been our mortgage broker ever since and helped us secure two new mortgages for a couple of buy-to-let properties in Ireland last year. I get a lot of questions around how mortgages work and who my mortgage broker is, so I thought it might be a nice idea to have Laura come on the show so I could ask her a couple of common questions that I receive. As always with this sort of stuff, guys, just the usual disclaimer that this episode really is just for educational purposes only, and if you have any specific questions, I would recommend reaching out to Laura and getting her to see if she can help answer any questions directly. And just another note to say that I'm not affiliated at all with Mortgage ABC. I receive no financial compensation from releasing this episode. To be honest, my big motivator and the big reason I was particularly interested in getting Laura on the show was because she helped a friend of mine who, through no fault of his own, was born with a heart condition that had virtually zero impact on everyday life for him, nor life expectancy, but unfortunately was unable to get life insurance in Ireland. As a result of him not being able to get life insurance, he was turned down by every major bank for a mortgage. And I introduced Laura to him, and lo and behold, they've since purchased their own property. So Laura was able to somehow find a way for them to secure a mortgage when everybody else said no. And I thought that was a really lovely thing that she did. So without further ado, let's welcome Laura to the show. So welcome, Laura. Feel free to tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Mortgage ABC.
Perfect. So my name is Laura Mansbridge and I'm one of the mortgage advisors here in Mortgage ABC. So Mortgage ABC is the mortgage division of First Choice Financial Services. And here at First Choice, we offer, you know, life insurance options, retirement planning advice, savings and investment advice, debt management, and of course, mortgage advice itself.
Excellent, Laura. Thank you so much for that. So I guess let's start with the obvious question, and that is, why use a mortgage broker versus going to the banks directly?
So I suppose as a broker, our job is to help take the stress away from your mortgage journey while also saving you time and energy with the whole application. And at Mortgage ABC, we actually hold agencies with all six of the mortgage lenders on the market, and we can provide the most suitable option for you and your circumstances. And I suppose some of the benefits of coming through a broker is that we look at your financial circumstances to find a deal that best suits you. What option might suit you may not suit person in the house next door, for example, but we have we have knowledge of the various lenders and we are able to find what is most suitable for you based on all the information that we go through. And we do also help with all the paperwork that comes with an application, and we do take you through the journey from the application being submitted and like the very first conversation right up until you get the keys to your new home and you can potentially move into the house.
Excellent. I always think any service that reduces paperwork is always a good thing. I mentioned in the introduction about my friend that you helped. Obviously, he was a first-time buyer. So let's start with first-time buyer mortgages. What sort of services do you typically offer for first-time buyers? And I guess in the case of my friend, what sort of ways can you help first-time buyers that traditional banks may not be able to cover?
So I suppose, like, as a first-time buyer, thoughts of starting the mortgage process can be so, so daunting. And, you know, there's so much information that it can be very overwhelming. So I suppose the benefit of coming to a broker is that, like, we're able to help with that information that's flying around, and we're able to tell you what's accurate and what's not accurate. And I suppose another benefit is we know the quirks that, you know, that some of the banks will take, say, like, mortgage protection waiver, like a life policy waiver, for example, and things like that, that mainstream lenders are, when if you go into the bank directly, they may not advise you that these are options. So, you know, if it was in a situation where you might not be able to get a life policy, like, we're able to work with the lenders that do take these waivers into account and see if there are options we can do. And, like, then again, like, we do also have options of potentially being able to get exceptions for applications and things like that. So there are, I suppose, more options available for coming to a broker, because we deal with all of the banks, so we know what potentially we could do with all of the lenders for you.
Thank you for that, Lauren. You know, it's one of those things with first-time buyers. I have a lot of friends, and I get a lot of emails on the podcast as well from people that are looking to buy for the first time. And there's definitely a sense of unfairness sometimes with mortgages, particularly for those that might have a health condition, or maybe they're single trying to secure a mortgage on their own, and all sorts of things that, you know, mortgages in many cases, they're discriminatory, really, when you really stop and think about it a little bit. So I think anything that you can be doing to help, and finding a way to, I don't want to say beat the banks, but I guess get around the banks and make it easier for people, I think is good. Obviously, I mentioned that we had a lot of success refinancing our home, which allowed us to purchase an investment property. But also anybody, I guess, that's maybe on a higher mortgage at the moment, that's maybe looking for options. When it comes to refinancing, what sort of services do you guys provide there?
Perfect. Yeah. So I suppose refinancing or equity release is the difference between the current market value of your home at the moment and the amount you owe on it. So you can actually release equity from your property for several reasons. You know, things such as, like, if you need to do home improvements, if, you know, potentially wanted to get a deposit to purchase another property, or even things like debt consolidation. Like, there are options available in terms of refinancing and equity release, things like that. And then I suppose in terms of the refinancing itself with no equity release, like, it's a great idea for people to do, to look around and shop around with the different lenders, because, you know, someone might be in a fixed rate at the moment and it could be ending, but whatever lender they're with might just automatically put them on to, say, the variable rate that's available at the time with that bank, and it mightn't be the most competitive option for them. But if they shop around, there's, you know, you could get a great deal, and some lenders actually do offer things like cash back for switchers and things like that to cover legal costs. So, you know, there are some great options in terms of refinancing and actually shopping around and seeing what options are there. I know there will still be, like, paperwork and things like that are needed, which isn't if you just stick with whatever rate you get put on when you finish your fixed rate, for example. But there's definitely far more benefits than disadvantages of actually looking at refinancing and seeing what options are out there. Like, you could look at saving great money from shopping around and seeing what actually is out there.
Yeah, look, nobody wants to pay more than they have to, and certainly shopping around is always advisable. And sometimes the difference in interest rates may not sound that much on paper, but when you actually look at the long-term impact of that, it can be fairly significant. I'm actually always blown away by friends who, you know, there might be a bill that comes up for, say, 2,000 euros, and they say, oh, I can't afford that. And then when you say, well, could you afford 20 euros a week for a year? And they say, oh, yeah, no problem. It's like, well, that's 1,000 euro. People don't always look at the impact of something long term, and interest rates are certainly one of those things. In fact, we recently paid a valuation fee of 185 euros to save a whopping 18 euros per month off our mortgage by receiving a reduction in the interest rate by having more equity in the property. And 18 euros a month doesn't sound like much, but as far as I was concerned, after 10 months, I was going to have that valuation fee paid, and anything else thereafter was simply a bonus. Let's take a moment maybe just to talk about tracker mortgages, because I know that this has been a fairly hot topic recently for anybody on a tracker mortgage. Obviously, they've had a fairly good run the last 10 years or so, and maybe recently they're starting to feel the pinch. In general, from some of the FIRE groups that I'm involved, the advice has been just to hang on in there and grin and bear it for a while until interest rates come back down. Would that be the advice that you would typically offer those coming to you who maybe have tracker mortgages?
Yeah, generally that's what we're kind of saying to people as well at the moment, because with the majority of trackers, like you actually, if you come off the tracker, you'll never be able to go back onto it. There are a few exceptions that people actually have on their tracker, like some clauses in it that they can get back onto it. But overall, like people generally can't get their tracker back if they switch or if they do move to another lender. So I suppose it's, I know at the moment the rates are, I suppose, going up and up and up with the trackers at the moment, but I would say it's probably more likely that people are sticking with the trackers they have at the moment and kind of seeing where things are going over the next couple of months.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you share the same advice as the FIRE community. So I know you touched earlier on equity release. So if somebody were maybe to be looking to release some equity from their primary residence in order to, say, buy an investment property, and I guess what sort of things would they be needing to have as a preparation for coming to you?
So I suppose if someone is looking to actually release equity to purchase another property, so that means the actual mortgage amount, like of course, I suppose there will need to be equity in the property as a starting point. And I suppose another thing that the people do need to be aware of is that the release in equity, like the mortgage amount, will actually increase. So that means like the monthly repayments will also increase. And what the banks, I suppose, in order to be eligible for the equity release, is they want to see that you have sufficient repayment capacity to actually afford that new increased loan. And repayment capacity, it's a key element of all mortgage applications. And it is actually like the ability to show a lender that you're used to putting money aside, whether it's, you know, your mortgage at the moment, savings, like build up in your current account, things like that, to actually balance out what the new mortgage repayment will be. So I suppose that's the most important things with equity releases are that there actually is equity in the property, and then that you actually have the repayment capacity to cover the new mortgage amount.
Excellent. And I guess let's talk about the deal itself. I mean, is there any requirements for what an investor should be looking for around a property that they do find? I always say that, and I think we'll talk about this later on, but I always say find the deal first and then fit the mortgage around the deal. So assuming that maybe somebody has realized that they've got a bit of equity in their home, they start looking at properties, what should they, or what are the important things that they need to be looking for when it comes to actually finding the right deal?
Yeah, so I suppose when it comes to like the, if they're looking to purchase a new buy to let, like I suppose the rent is a key factor in the application. So when the lenders are assessing the application, what they look at is they want to make sure that the rent covers the proposed mortgage repayment itself plus 200. So it has to be 1.2 times the actual mortgage repayment. So if, you know, like the property could be in a great location, like a high value property, but if the rent, you know, it could be in a rent pressure zone, so you might actually be able to increase the rent. And if the rent is quite low, that could actually cap how much you could actually borrow from the property or look to get mortgage out on the property. So I suppose the rent is a really key factor in the process to make sure that the rent will be sufficient for the proposed mortgage repayments.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one there. And certainly in my experience, I've started to notice that the interest rates certainly do have an impact on the ability to borrow. I certainly still do look for deals these days, but I'm finding it a lot tougher to construct and put deals together than I did, say, 12 months or so ago. And it's largely because the impact that the interest rates are having. The higher interest rates mean that the mortgage payment is naturally higher, which means when you apply that 1.2 times rule, the rent has to also increase. However, rent prices haven't increased as quickly as mortgage prices are rising. And that's to say, it doesn't mean that a higher rent may not be possible, but at the end of the day, you're relying on a bank valuation or a valuer to give fair market rent. And that's typically based on other existing rents in the area. So I think it is becoming a little bit more challenging. And the net result of that is that you may find that you need to have a bigger deposit together to get around that rule, because effectively by having a bigger deposit, you have a smaller mortgage repayment, and thus that 1.2 times rule will hopefully be more in your favor. So certainly please do keep that in mind if you are looking to put deals together, that with higher interest rates, you may need to consider a bigger deposit to make a deal happen. All right, Laura, and I guess one question that I do get a lot of is, as you know, I'm self-employed and have my own company established. And last year we were able to put two mortgages and two deals together through the company. And I know that it's changed recently. In fact, the second mortgage that we set up, I had to set up a sub company or an SPV in order to put the deal together. But if somebody were to have a company already, could you explain the process of how they could go about looking to buy a property through the company?
Yeah, so I suppose there is, company mortgages are, they're quite a niche option for people. And I suppose there is one lender that does them. And what the company mortgages allow are actually borrowers to purchase a buy-to-let property through a designated, so what's called as an SPV company. They purchase the property in the company's name as opposed to in their own name. So like the company is the actual owner of the property, but they're also the company is the owner of the debt as well. So like it's a great option for self-employed people if they were looking to purchase property. And these SPV companies, they can actually be set up with accountants. Like there are fees for setting it up and everything, and for maintaining the actual company itself, but like there's great benefits to them. And I suppose one key thing with these SPVs are that the sole purpose of the company has to be for rental properties, and these are like this will be noted in company documents that the accountant draws up, and that actually gets sent into the bank itself. But they're a great option for self-employed people.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And I often get asked, why are you setting up these mortgages through a company when it would be far better in the long term to set them up personally? And they're actually right on that one. And I know I'm going to ask some questions later on around mortgages through a pension and buying through a pension and so on, which I guess falls under the same umbrella. So whether you're buying in a company or through a pension, obviously it makes more sense in the long run to buy personally. However, the reality is that it's not that simple. And I mentioned earlier that it's about finding a deal and putting a mortgage around that, rather than doing it the other way around, which is to get approval for a mortgage and then go and try and find a property. And the reason for that is because you're going to need to love the deal. If you don't love the deal, you're going to hate all this paperwork that comes when it comes to actually securing a mortgage. And it's easy to sit here and say, yeah, sure, it's signing a few documents. It is not that simple. Dealing with solicitors, accountants, and banks isn't a huge amount of fun, and that's before a tenant even goes into the property. So you're going to need to make sure that you love the deal before you get into this game. And probably the best example was that third investment property that we secured last year, where I loved the deal. I knew that we were getting a great price, and lo and behold, actually recently a neighboring property was sold for a lot more than what we paid for the property last August. So I knew the deal was good, and that's kind of been confirmed recently. But when we went to secure the mortgage, Laura, you probably remember this, you mentioned that ICS had changed their lending rules, and so we had to set up an SPV company or a separate subsidiary company in order to do the deal. And it was painful because there isn't actually any company type in Ireland known as an SPV. What we had to set up in the end was simply a subsidiary company and made sure that we mentioned that it was a property management or a rental business or something like that. There was some sort of category that we had to select when we set up the company. But it was a pain. And if I didn't love that deal, there is no way I would have gone through that additional paperwork and cost to get that all set up. The fundamental reason that I recommend loving the deal and then putting the mortgage around it is because ultimately we're looking to secure that property in whatever form we can. And whilst buying through a company is not the ideal scenario, it's not that tax efficient, it does result in extra paperwork and extra accountancy fees every year, it was the only way that we were able to actually put the deal together. And that's really the important point. Yes, we could draw down 50% tax and save for a deposit that way, but it will save me at least 30% longer, at least, to put a deal together. You see, within a company typically has fairly good and healthy cash flow. So it was actually quite easy for us to save for a deposit quite quickly, far, far easier than what it would have been had we been trying to save personally. Furthermore, if there's a problem with the property or if we need to do renovations, as we've had to do with the two properties that we purchased last year, it's a lot easier to do those renovations within a company because a company typically has far deeper pockets, as the saying goes. And look, I apologize if I am cramming in way too much information in a short space of time. Obviously, do reach out to Laura if you want to get more information on this sort of stuff. I should point out finally, as well, that with these company mortgages, they do typically come with additional fees. But again, the hope is that a company has the deeper pockets to be able to cover those. And again, Laura, I'm sure you'll be able to go through those. And I know from a documentation point of view that things like the articles of association, a couple of years accounts from an accountant are needed, tax clearance certificate, and obviously all the bank statements and so on. So there's a little bit of paperwork there. But Laura, I guess for those that might be looking to buy a buy-to-let in their own name, what sort of paperwork is required there, and how does that differ from, say, the paperwork that's required within a company?
Yeah, so I suppose if someone is looking to purchase a buy-to-let in their own personal names, it's almost a mixture of the company element and the, say, like the PDH element. So documents that you need are generally, if you're PUI worker anyway, like your employment details summary, salary certificate, 3 months payslip, and then self-employed would need last year's audited accounts, tax clearance certificate. You would also need, 6 months bank statements for all accounts, loan statements, Revolut statements, proof of ID, proof of address. So I suppose that element is quite similar to the PDH purchase. But another, I suppose, side of the buy-to-lets, if you were purchasing in your own name as well, is that they do still focus on the rent hugely. So like the rent is 1.2 times the proposed mortgage repayments. So I suppose that's one thing to still keep in mind if you're purchasing the property through your own name or through the company, that the rent kind of always kind of has to be in your mind that it's a key element for it. And I suppose as well with the buy-to-lets, I suppose there is a few key things to keep in mind at the moment with some of the lenders, is that there is a minimum loan size with some of them. And with, I suppose, in terms of the loan to value, you do need to put a minimum of 30% of the property purchase price towards the purchase. And then I suppose one other thing that I suppose you mightn't think of straight away is that there are a couple of costs that need to be taken into account when you are considering actually purchasing a buy-to-let property. And they'd be things like, legal fees. Like there, you have your own legal fees, but you also have to pay the bank legal fees as well. So you're getting nearly hit with legal fees twice. And then the bank's actually charging an application fee as well for processing the application, just because of all kind of, I suppose, all the work that goes into it. And then just the one thing that you have then as well is like your own valuation fee for the property. So I suppose there are a couple of hidden costs involved in a buy-to-let that you may not think of straight away when you do actually start to look at a couple of properties.
Yeah, thanks so much, Laura. And I think it's great that you're being so upfront about some of those costs. And look, as I see it, it's all part of being in a property business. And there are going to be costs when it comes to securing lending. There is very little that can be done to avoid that short of paying cash for a property. So I very much got to a stage where at first I would be a little bit frustrated by these extra costs. And then I eventually came to the conclusion that if you're going to borrow money for a property, that's just part of the process. So look, before we wrap up today, should we just quickly jump over to discussing trying to secure a mortgage or a property through a pension? It's not something that I have firsthand experience with, but I'm hoping that you might be able to give a brief explanation of how it works.
Yeah, so I suppose pension mortgages are another way of purchasing a buy-to-let, and I suppose they are only for buy-to-let properties. You can't do it on a primary residence at all. It's just on a buy-to-let. So what you're able to do is you're able to refinance money from your existing pension fund to actually purchase the property. The one thing, I suppose, with it is you do need to evidence that you have the funds available in your pension to complete the transaction. And I suppose another thing to note is that the pension mortgage, it's unit trust only. And I suppose the lender that does look after these types of mortgages has a list of trustees, and it will have to be with one of them to be transferred in order to be actually able to proceed with the pension mortgage. But we can look to get it transferred over if it's a case that it wasn't with one of the designated trustees that they have. And I suppose as well with pension mortgage as well, another thing to note is that you can get up to a 15-year term, and they will only do capital interest, and only variable rates are available for it as well. And there is, I suppose, a minimum loan size with pension mortgages as well, and at the moment it is €80,000. And I suppose just like the buy-to-lets, like the buy-to-lets, if you're doing it in your own name or through the company, like the rent does still have to be 1.2 times the proposed mortgage repayments in order to work. So I suppose the key point with all the buy-to-lets is that the rent has to be 1.2 times the proposed mortgage payments. And then I suppose a good side of the pension mortgages as well is that they are very light on documents that are actually needed for the application. So all of these things like the application form, and that is, half completed. Like I generally would help complete half of it, and then the trustee company completes the other half, proof of identity and proof of address, and then a declaration that I would send over as well. So it's very light document wise, which is a nice change from the PDHs or the buy-to-let in your individual name or in the company.
Ah, bliss. And there is a sense of irony there, because I actually would have thought that the pension mortgages would have been the more complicated ones. As I mentioned, I haven't personally purchased a property through a pension, but I think there's one other thing to mention there, that From my understanding, it needs to be a hands-off deal. And that means that if you are looking to secure a property through a pension, you typically need to be looking to secure turnkey properties. And there is a requirement that you get a property manager in place. Just keep that in mind. But I think the best idea here, if you have any questions, is to reach out to Laura directly and she'll be able to help answer any of those. All right. And I'm really keen to talk about why I think having a mortgage broker on your team is such a benefit when it comes to building a property business. But before I do, I know, Laura, that there is a fee associated with engaging with your services. So would you be able to tell us a little bit about that?
Perfect. Yeah. So basically we charge, it's a once-off fee of €500. And I suppose the fee isn't payable until we actually receive your approval in principle from the lender. So, you know, if it's a case that we do an initial conversation and it's the application mightn't work based, you know, on rent, there could be anything, just in case it doesn't work. Like there's not going to be any charge for having that initial chat or even like looking through documents. The fee actually only becomes applicable once we receive that approval from the bank, which means we're able to kind of progress with the application and get, you know, house hunting and putting offers on properties. And I suppose one thing to note as well, that we don't actually charge any fee for switchers or refinancing at all. So there's no fee for switchers. And another thing as well, that like included in the fee, like we do also look after like mortgage protection inside the office as well. So at least it saves you having to go looking for somebody to help you with that, like when you're getting closer to actually drawing down the mortgage. So we kind of do all of that in-house for you and trying to take away one more headache anyway from you.
So I want to take a moment just to talk about why we should consider a mortgage broker. And yes, paying a €500 fee isn't necessarily a huge amount of fun. And yes, you could avoid this fee by going directly to the bank. However, in my experience, when we look to build a property business, it's really, really important that we have a great team around us. You guys are probably aware that I have virtually zero DIY ability. I can just about change a toilet seat. So for me, putting a great team together is really, really important. I recently had some problems with some electrics in our third investment property, and I was able to get the job fixed through a simple phone call and a Revolut payment. That's what we want to be doing when it comes to building a property business. We don't want everything to be relying on us. Having a good solicitor, having a good accountant, and having a good mortgage broker is all part of putting a great team together. And Laura is always the first person that I call when it comes to finding a deal and seeing if the numbers work. Having that sort of relationship with somebody is extremely important. Whereas had I gone through a bank, that banker might have changed or moved on and I might be suddenly dealing with somebody new, or the bank might change their lending criteria and I might find that one day I need to start shopping around for a different bank. Whereas through a broker, it's the same contact with a different bank that they will source for me. The last thing I'll say on this is, from my experience anyway, dealing directly with banks, I sometimes feel like banks are trying to find a reason to say no. And I feel like with a mortgage broker, and particularly my own experience working with Laura, is that she's looking to find a way to make the deal happen. You see, it's in Laura's best interest to try to secure you a mortgage, whereas with a bank, they're not always incentivized the same way. I'd much rather be dealing with somebody who's positive and looking for a way to make a deal work than looking for a reason to not make the deal happen at all. So my advice on this is, if you are looking to put together a property business and maybe you're thinking about getting into property, particularly on the buy-to-let side, that having somebody in your corner is going to be highly recommended. And from that point of view, I would say the €500 one-time fee is well worth the investment to have somebody on your team helping you put your deals together. All right, Laura, so if somebody is looking to get some more information from you, what is the best way for them to get in touch?
So the best way to get in contact would be to email me, would be Laura, so L-A-U-R-A at mortgageabc.ie, or you can give me a call on 087-942-1243. But email or call and I'll be able to get back to you.
Excellent. And I'll be sure to link your email address and phone number in the show notes. Laura, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to be able to speak mortgages with you for half an hour. And yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on the show, and all the best with everything moving forward.
That is no problem at all. Thank you so much for having me, Michael.